Welcome to another episode of In Vita. My name's Ben Ellis. In this episode, I'm joined by Guillaume Crist, Michael Rowe, and Ken Chance Larson as we discuss critical thinking in physiotherapy education. We talk a little bit about what critical thinking is, what we understand by it, what the relevance might be to physio, and how we can try and develop those sort of critical thinking skills in our students. This was an idea that was put forward by Guillaume, and it's the second of three episodes that we recorded a little while back, and I'm finally now getting to edit and out to you to listen, so I hope you enjoy it. Just before I start, a reminder that you can still register for the In Vita Unconference, Experiments in Physiotherapy Education, which is going to be taking place in Lausanne on the 14th and 15th of May, straight after WCPT is finished. Guillaume, Michael, Ken, myself are all going to be there, along with a group of other really interesting sounding physiotherapy educators, some of whom I know, some of whom I don't, and I'm looking forward to meeting for the first time. And so if you want to come and join the conversation, and it's really going to be 2 days of conversation, then head over to inbeta.uwc.ac.za/unconference to register for your free place and come and join us in Switzerland. Okay, here we are then. On to the episode. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks a lot. So I'm going to just start by asking Guillaume Crist to just introduce himself, give a little bit of background, and then we'll sort of start off with some thoughts, initial thoughts on what critical thinking might be. Over to you, Guillaume.
Okay, hi everyone. So I'm Guillaume Crist. I'm based in Lausanne in Switzerland. I'm lecturing at the Lausanne PT School since 2008, and mostly in the musculoskeletal field, but I'm also interested in clinical reasoning and critical thinking. Lately we analyze and discuss the pre-graduate program in terms of critical thinking in Lausanne, to see where and how we teach and facilitate and assess critical thinkings. And lately I had to participate also in a new module in the postgraduate master that we just opened in Lausanne for PT, and a module on critical thinking.
And so it sounds like there's quite a few aspects of where kind of critical thinking has been forming part of your thinking and part of a decision around where to take the programme and how we might go about teaching those things. So I'm hoping we can sort of draw some of those out as we go through. So we had to put some initial thoughts down on the In Vita document that we sort of shared beforehand, and we're gonna go through the questions, but we may or may not get to all of them depending on time. But we sort of had a bit of a chat beforehand, and thought that it was definitely worth us starting by trying to figure out if we could agree on really what critical thinking is. And Guillaume, you'd put down sort of three different definitions of it, which spanned from the more kind of maybe process-driven academic around the application of skills, the idea of synthesis, of analysis of ideas, so kind of getting towards the sort of higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy, but coming at it from quite a clearly kind of academic standpoint, through maybe a slightly broader definition, which talked about the expectation of critical thinking is that we don't take things at face value, and that it's about looking deeper, looking for evidence, looking for reasons why we might believe something, through to a sort of third and even more broad, if you like, definition from the Critical Physio Network, which talked about it really going to the heart of asking fundamental questions about what we believe in and why we believe those things. So and actually kind of explicitly saying it's not just about a process, it's more than being able to kind of appraise an article or kind of apply some sort of, you know, academic structured way of thinking to a problem. So
Guillaume, I just wondered, sort of from those three, so we've almost got a kind of sliding scale, if you like, from a sort of more academic end at one side to a broader, you know, understanding of who we are as a person. And I just wondered, for you, where does critical thinking from a physiotherapy perspective, where does it come in? What elements of those different definitions do kind of most felt like they applied to you?
Okay, the three definitions I thought were important to discuss, because when we analyzed the program and discussed with my colleague here in Lausanne, we found out that there were so many definitions of critical thinking, most of them closely linked with clinical reasoning, but also with reflective practice. And I think the first definition is probably the clear one. However, I don't think it takes all the aspects of critical thinking in my point of view, and it's maybe more related to sometimes writing skills that we ask our students to do, to provide essays that have a structure, that have a analysis and critical point of view. However, I really like the third definition, and I think that's the definition that we should discuss today, because it's not very clear for me how to facilitate this kind of critical thinking with our students, and it's not very clear also how to assess that. But I think it's the most important one for the future of the physio as professional after their students, when they go in the real world, if they have some skills within the third definition, I think it would be very useful. Last point, I think maybe the first definition, it's related to maybe to some kind of critical thinking skills, but the third one, it could be seen more like a philosophy rather than just skills.
Okay, great, thanks. So it seems like there is, would you say that you're quite clear there's a definite difference between critical thinking and critical writing, and that maybe from an academic perspective we focus on the critical writing and we pay less attention to actually what we mean by critical thinking. Would that be fair?
Yes, I think that the critical writing, it's much more easier to assess, it's much more easier to teach also, because it's quite clear how you have to do that. However, I'm not sure it's the most important skills that physiotherapists need to have when they are in clinical placement or in clinical practice after as a professional. The third one is maybe much more important for the profession itself.
Is it important to be able to think critically, to be able to write critically, or can we teach students to write critically without them having to really think critically?
I think the more academic critical thinking, it's a good way to start. It's really important for the students that they learn to give arguments, to justify their thoughts, to be able to have a critical appraisal of some kind of evidence, to do a good synthesis of the evidence and give some implication. And I think the first definition, the academic definition, it's really good for that. However, it doesn't mean that students that is good in academic writing will have some kind of critical thinking about, or some kind of capacity to critique some maybe basement of his profession.
I'm going to bring in Michael, because you were just raising a hand there, Michael.
Thanks very much. I was just wondering a little bit about how you guys are thinking of writing, because you know, one of the things that writing is really good for is for kind of structuring your thoughts and developing an argument. So if we're thinking of a very kind of algorithmic approach to something like clinical reasoning, which is, you know, gather your evidence and use that evidence to kind of, you marshal that evidence in support of a claim or an argument for why you're going to do something specific. I think writing is really powerful for that, and if by critical thinking you mean presenting an argument or presenting evidence in support of an argument, then I think writing is a very powerful way to get a sense of how students are able to coherently and concisely express a claim and provide evidence for that claim. If you're talking about critical thinking as a philosophical approach or a way of being, then I think we're talking about something completely different, and I'm not even sure if they're on the same spectrum. And so, you know, for me, it would be difficult to look at critical thinking in the philosophical sense and to say, can we look at some writing and use that to make a judgment about whether or not a student is employing critical thinking? I'm not so sure that those are aligned. I would say that that algorithmic approach to clinical reasoning, writing might be really good for that. But if you're looking to try and investigate someone's way of being, their way of thinking, then yeah, I'm not so sure if the writing is going to be aligned with that. And so I just want to kind of be clear, since we're talking about kind of our operational definition, when we talk about critical thinking, are we talking about it in the sense of like an argumentative approach, like marshalling evidence to support a claim, or are we talking about something that's a little bit more abstract and a little bit more philosophical? Because I think that, as I say, I don't think that they're necessarily aligned.
So I'd fancy coming back in on that one. I think that something that I was trying to work through was this idea about, well, what is it? And it seems like it maybe applies to a sense of truth, but that you could come at that in a couple of ways, depending on what our sort of assumptions are about truth. So if we're kind of saying I think the Plymouth definition talked about critical thinking being about moving closer to what is true, and that's through a process of kind of evidence and argument, and kind of the critical writing seems to fit closely with that. That it's the interrogation of a problem or a thought process or a kind of clinical reasoning picture or whatever it might be, and that through thinking through it and using evidence to reason behind our thinking, that we are going to come out with a closer to the best representation of truth we can get out of that. And that seems fine as long as we assume that there is a sort of objective truth for us to move closer to. But for me, that kind of definition then falls down if we've got an assumption about truth that there are multiple different truths, and it's a much more kind of constructivist kind of subjective view of truth. And in that sense, but I think the essence of critical thinking being about moving closer to truth can still hold. It just has to shift what that means. So rather than about us using argument to get closer to what the correct outcome is, it's more than about understanding the range of outcomes and being able to see, okay, the truth in any particular context for the players in that context. So that for me starts to move closer to this idea of what it is to kind of be a therapist or be whatever it is that you're being. Because you're understanding the truths and the assumptions behind that, and you can then unpick them and see and understand why some people might not share that, or why the profession is where it is from a certain sense. And that seems to fit much more with the kind of critical physio networks kind of idea and definition and that. But it seems I would agree, it seems quite a different aspect. But maybe it still works if we've got this idea of truth at the heart, that it is in some way about understanding truth better, but then we've just got to be able to be flexible in that definition if we're being flexible in our definition of truth. Does that help at all, or does that muddy the waters further? I don't know.
No, that's very helpful. I like the idea of having some kind of a range of truths. So rather than talking about the correct answer or trying to guide students towards what the best approach is or the right approach is, we could rather look at a spectrum of possible truths, and that, you know, depending on the context and all the kind of interrelating variables, any one of those outcomes may actually be appropriate. So I like the way that you kind of suggested we think about that.
If I come back to what Michael said, I totally agree with you. I think the first definition regarding critical thinking, the more academic one, is much more easier to understand. But it's also, for me, less interesting in terms of professional development. And I think, I don't know if you agree, but for today, I would love to discuss more critical thinking as the philosophical definition, as the third definition. How can we help students to become critical in regards to new knowledge, in regards to their profession? How can we have students that will do some new things within their professions that will develop new strategies? And I think for that, the third definition is very, very useful.
Okay, thanks. So I think that's maybe a nice point for us to move on. It seemed like there's broad agreement there that there are different aspects to this, and some are more academic, and some go to a more philosophical place. So if we're thinking about that more kind of philosophical idea around like who we are as a profession, and what that means, and how we might change that, and how we might seek to change that in the future. Are there any practical examples of how you've tried to communicate that idea or to teach that concept in your practice, Guillaume?
So I think one of the main point for me now is that the more I read and the more I learn in my topic, the more I understand that I don't understand anything, really. There is so many areas where we don't know things. And I think sharing that with the students are a first way to help them see there is no one truth, and it's not, things are moving, knowledge is moving, and maybe it could help them to discuss the knowledge that we present to them, and to help them being critical on new knowledge when they new information when they get them.
Would you say that's something that we as a profession haven't always done? Is that something that's kind of it has been inherent in how we've tried to teach things in the past, or have we maybe shied away from encouraging students to think differently and to kind of look for the problems maybe in some of the things that we're teaching them and some of the historical ways of having done things?
I think that there is still lots of information that is given to physiotherapy students, at least here in Switzerland, that are very black or white. All the biomechanical stuff is still taught, and I think it's mostly taught at the beginning of the training, so when they arrive a little bit later and we try to say that there is no one truth, and you don't have back pain just because you do lots of flexion, for example. It's sometimes very difficult for them to understand that and to discuss that and to see that there is no black and white, just one truth and black and white things. So I think we should start the training, the pre-graduate training, already with that kind of assumption that we will train students to help them to deal with information and to help them having better capabilities as a physiotherapist. But by giving them so much theoretical knowledge that is black and white, I think we hinder the possibility that to develop critical thinking.
Yeah, so I completely agree with that. And so one of the things that I'd kind of put upon them from as a teaching session that I did with our first years last week was a task that I've kind of done a couple of times now, and it feels quite kind of liberating to do it relatively early on in their sort of experience of training to become a physio. And that's to get them to think about something in a group that they believe, that they've been taught so far that they are happy with and that they think is true, and then to try and kind of undercut that belief and kind of get them to think about, well, what if it isn't true, what would that mean for them, to think about even just the basics of why they picked that example that they picked. So what other assumptions might they have already brought with them onto the program that's making them predisposed to believe this and predisposed to be kind of comfortable with that, where they might not be comfortable with something else that they've been taught. And so that's kind of, I think in doing that, I was trying to get to that idea that you're doing, that actually we should be saying really early on that not everything that we teach them is necessarily true, and our understanding might change. It might change in the time that they're with us on the course, but it might change in 10 years' time or 20 years' time. And it may be that actually some of these ideas have changed in the past sort of 10 years. So having like a fixed idea and trying to learn things as true at the point at which they're told them is maybe not helpful. So that seemed a way of trying to get them to be comfortable with the idea that they didn't have to believe everything that they were told. And you could kind of tell from the responses it was like an exciting thing to do for some. You know, it was okay to kind of challenge. It was all right for me to be there saying, well, yeah, I wouldn't ever do that, and I don't think that's something that would form part of my practice. And because I don't think that's a message that they get very much. We don't tend to tell them what we kind of don't believe in. Do you know what I mean? We tend to say, this is what I would do, and this is why I would do that, and that works to an extent. And anything that we're less comfortable with or we don't think forms part of our practice, we either just like leave out or leave for someone else to teach who does believe it. And so what the students get is this generally quite a positive reinforcement of most ideas rather than any kind of negative questioning. And then it can become quite challenging to bring that in afterwards. Have you had any sort of similar experiences where you've, you know, try to get those discussions going and had a positive response or a negative response from students in terms of not liking that?
I think when you challenge their beliefs, and sometimes there are beliefs that are in the students much before they start as a physio student, it's hard for them to be challenged, and it's also hard for us to be in a position to say we don't know everything, and to be in the position to discuss a knowledge and not deliver the knowledge. And I think for the lecturer, for the teacher, for the educator, I think to be in a position more as a facilitator, it's for me much more interesting, but it's also sometimes much more challenging, but because you don't know where the lecture or where the the discussion with the student will go. And on the other hand, I think one thing that we need to be aware also is the training is kind of short. In Switzerland it's 3 years, and they need to go out of the school with some kind of clinical capabilities and not just thoughts and uncertainties. And that's difficult to do both at the same time, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to bring in Michael.
I just wanted to go back just quickly to the question that you asked about a practical suggestion for that kind of challenging of students taken for granted assumptions. One of the ways two ways that I found are quite effective are to have students work through research papers that present contradictory findings about a similar question. And so we talk about evidence-based practice where the student has to pull in some kind of research paper and then use that to build an argument. And so when you show them two papers that say, you know, fundamentally different things, it kind of, you know, helps them to understand that, you know, that word truth, that objective truth, is very difficult to come at. And then the other way is to team teach and to have situations in the classroom where you have lecturers who have different points of view. And so when a student asks a question, to be able to say, well, I would approach it this way, and to turn around to the other lecturer in the classroom and say, well, how would you do it? And to model for the students that kind of professional, not quite disagreement, but the understanding that we can come at the same problem from different perspectives and that we both may be right. And then I wanted to talk about this idea of undermining students' kind of beliefs, or rather certainty, undermining that certainty in some of the ways that we do things in the program. And one of the things that I found with my students is that they believe that when they get assessed in their clinical exam and they get 60%, they believe that 60% is some kind of objective indicator of competence. There's a very strong self-worth that's tied to the mark that they get. And they don't realize that that mark is, you know, probably more to do with how hungry their examiner was than whether or not they were, you know, really, really competent or incompetent. And so one of the ways that you can kind of help students to kind of push back against this idea that, you know, the system is somehow the kind of all-knowing, all-seeing authority, and we are going to determine competence in some kind of objective way, is to actually show them mark sheets where the examiners have, you know, wildly divergent ideas about the student's actual performance. And to say to the student, well, this examiner gave you a 60 and this other examiner gave you a 40. So one has fundamentally thought that you were incompetent and the other one has fundamentally thought that you were actually all right. You got 50%. You know, there's something weird going on here where we've got two competent, qualified authorities who are now making some decision about your progression through the program, and they both have completely different ideas about what they saw on the day. And I think when you can show students those kinds of inconsistencies within the structure of the program, the thing that they believe in so strongly, it can help them to, like, A, not feel so bad about the mark that they got, but B, also understand that we are fallible. So I don't know, we don't need to talk about any of that, but I just kind of wanted to put that in there, just with this idea of kind of helping students to undermine their beliefs.
So I really love that idea. I'm intrigued in the practicalities of it. So is that something you have done, and has there been any kind of any kickback? Is there any negative outcomes from kind of showing that process to students who might be quite mark focused in a lot of what they do?
Yeah, I've done it, but not with students in that year, not with the students themselves. I don't want them to go back to their examiners from their previous clinical block and, you know, completely have a blowout. You know, so you can take a student from 3 years ago, you can anonymize the mark sheets, and you can, you know, just make sure that, you know, the placement isn't known, the examiners aren't known, and the student isn't known. I think it's really important that we do these difficult things and have these with students, even though they may be some blowback to the program. I mean, this is the reality of assessment. Assessment is subjective. There is no objectivity in assessment, especially in clinical practice. And so I think it's really important that students understand that mark that they get is not some kind of objective measure. And as examiners, we have to be able to defend the marks that we give students. They have every right to question and challenge the marks that they get. And if we can't defend the mark that we've given them, then something is wrong with the assessment process. So it is something that I've done with students, and none of them have turned around and completely, you know, lost it. You know, I think there is an inherent understanding that subjectivity is it's kind of built in. There's no way you can get out of it. We can't escape from the subjectivity of assessment.
Okay, thanks. So we're kind of wandering off topic a bit there. So I was going to come back to another point you made earlier there, which was about kind of evidence-based practice and using two articles with kind of contradictory findings to show that there might be a disagreement about truth and to get students to think critically that way. And it seemed to me that's a progression of the understanding of evidence-based practice. How you described it seemed quite relevant to what I would observe, is that students often go through this process of, to begin with, evidence-based practice for them means finding some evidence that supports their position, through to this idea that evidence-based practice is about understanding the evidence and your position arising out of that. And so it seemed like, that was something that kind of good critical writing can capture and is a good kind of vehicle for being able to show that process. So I was just going to throw that back to Guillaume and sort of say that this idea of how we build our understanding of evidence and how we kind of weigh that, do you feel that really contributes to this kind of wider kind of critical thinking?
Yeah, I think Michael did a good association between this more academic definition of critical thinking and the fact that we ask students in essays to develop argument using evidence that that is not always going in the same way, and by doing that, it clearly helped them to develop a more broader sense of critical thinking as the third definition. So it could be a very nice tool to help them. However, I'm thinking, how much do you use essays as a tool to teach and facilitate critical thinking, and how much do you use that just to assess? Because without feedback, it's just a way of assessing, but it's not really a way of helping students to develop this kind of philosophical skill.
I'm going to bring in Ken because he's raised his hand, and just before we sort of move on to that point, but I'll come back onto that idea of how much an essay is as kind of teaching tool for this process too. But Ken, over to you.
Thanks. Yes, as a virtual hand, I'll put it up as well to get some exercise. One of the things, lots of interesting stuff been said. One of the things that I like to tell students early and often is, don't trust a word that I tell you. And I like for them to be see me as a facilitator rather than a guru. One of the challenges, I think, one of the skills that perhaps we should try and foster in them is the confidence and along with the communication and diplomatic skills to challenge authority, to challenge perceived wisdom, whether that is in their peer group, in their lecturers, and their clinical educators. And that's often a real challenge, particularly in the clinical environment, I find, because you want to be seen to be getting on with a job in hand and not being a troublemaker. Having said that, of course, some clinical educators are very receptive to being challenged, but others are less so, and I suppose it's the same with lecturers. But I really like the idea of having sort of two lecturers in the same room and with perhaps different preferences or experiences or both, and so the students get the direct experience with there might be more than one road that leads to an acceptable sort of management or approach to a certain patient. But then it is the other example about using two different articles with on the same topic, which perhaps have different sort of findings. I think that's useful too, but the sort of the volume of information that is out there can be overwhelming, and even using just two articles, it's still just a snapshot. So I think it's useful, certainly in the early stages, for students to use more established or developed evidence, like clinical guidelines, systematic reviews and the like, where an understanding the approach that's been taken to arrive at those and again, with the limitations that are explicit in those, such as, you know, there's medium quality evidence from a small number of studies that such and such. So they understand that there isn't an absolute truth, but to arrive as close to an approach to a problem that is justifiable, you know, it's not a journey you have to do yourself. There are lots of resources you can use to help you along that.
Great. Yeah, thanks. And I mean, because it seems like there's been a bit of a sort of push back really against sort of clinical guidelines and this idea that maybe that's undermining clinical reasoning and kind of being critical with evidence, in that we, you know, as you say, it's important to understand where those things have come from. And there, as I say, it seems like there's a bit of a kind of shift in the profession to question those guidelines in some quarters more than maybe in the past, from people who were probably at the forefront of kind of saying that these were a good thing, you know, where we've come from not having any evidence, and we've now getting to the point of there's that much evidence we can't deal with it, so we're having to pull it together into some sort of synthesized kind of format, but then that has its own problems, it definitely seemed there was something in what you were saying about understanding the process of how it's got there, that those are the most easy to kind of to understand for the students, and the easiest for them to probably use, particularly when they're learning and they're not going to have the ability to take everything on. But if we take them too far down that road of, you know, this is what the guideline says, so therefore that's what we're teaching you, that because it's in this guideline and that's the right answer if you're asked what to do for this, you know, then we're probably missing a kind of critical thinking trick there, aren't we, in that, you know, they've got to understand the kind of relative strength or weakness of those things, and that other people might come from a position maybe where they wouldn't necessarily support that guideline approach at all, you know, which then takes us almost back around to the start, you know, maybe there's a question there around, and it was one of the questions we were kind of going to come on to, like, at what point in the education process should we be doing this? So I would agree with you. I think it's one of the key things I try and say early on is not everything that I tell you is true and is right, you know, and I think we should be saying that from the first week that students turn up with us. So that it seems like there's some stuff we can be doing right from the start, but we could overwhelm students by kind of introducing all this uncertainty and all the arguments for and against different approaches of using evidence and different approaches of thinking. So, yeah, how should we... How much should we try and protect students from some of this stuff? Do we need to protect them at all, or should we be, you know, should we be opening them up to the whole discussion right from the start? I'll put that idea back out to you, Ken, and then I'll broaden it out to everyone else.
It's difficult, but I was just using an example yesterday. I was teaching postgrad students about OA, and I used the NICE guidelines for that, and I have to say they're from 2014, and they're going to be updated in the next I think couple of years or so, but I really like them, and they're not black and white, and it's there is, so you know, lots of algorithms and ways of choosing what you think is important based on the patient in front of you. It's very, you know, biopsychosocial, and it's not a recipe. And it's still, you know, areas that they clearly say we don't know fully, but this is what we recommend that is done based on the gaps in the knowledge that we have. So, and I think you're right. I think introducing the concept that there is an absolute truth early on is important. But at the same time, try to not overwhelm them with conflicting evidence so that they just get disillusioned with the whole profession. That can be challenging too.
Yeah, definitely. Michael, you've got your hand up. Did you want to have a thought on that? I just wanted to go back to the question that Guillaume asked earlier about how valuable writing is with respect to assessing clinical reasoning, and just kind of bring that question forward to and link it to what you and Ken were just talking about. I think one of the challenges with trying to do this with students in the very early parts of the program is that they lack the experience to be able to structure the kind of patient interaction And so we give them forms that very clearly label how they must structure the process. And kind of some of the pushback against that has been in the form of developing a narrative. So trying to get students to be able to tell the patient's story and understand their own role within that story. So it becomes less about, you know, gathering evidence and fitting it all into the flowchart, and then the algorithm spits out the answer at the end. A story is open-ended, and the conclusion of the story can be anything. There's no set way that the story has to end. And so if we think about the idea of writing essays, I think essays can be a very powerful way to get into the mind of a student when we're talking about narrative reasoning as opposed to the hypothetico-deductive reasoning that we focus on in the early stages, because they're novices. And so they don't have the tacit knowledge and the depth of experience to be able to do the kind of more probabilistic type of reasoning, where they kind of just intuitively know an answer. So we focus on the hypothetico-deductive approach. And I think maybe in the early stages, we could have students focus more on telling the patient's story through essay, through narrative, through poetry, maybe, through art, through other ways of understanding the patient's experience and their role within that experience, or their part in that experience. And then when the student writes that up, to submit it to you, and your feedback is given before the grade is given. So all of your feedback is all of your feedback is about improving the final submission for which the student gets a grade. So just in response to Guillaume's question about how the essay writing actually can help develop reasoning, the feedback has to be built into the process rather than the output. So, you know, the students write the reflection, the narrative of the patient's story, the interaction with the patient. They get feedback from you, and then they submit the documents at the end. And I think that may be one way that we could introduce these ideas early on in the process, and kind of help students move away from this idea that there's some kind of an algorithm that if they just follow the right steps and input the right data, then they'll get the right answer.
Thanks, Michael. I think if I try to summarize some things that have been said on how to facilitate critical thinking among students, I think one of the powerful things that have been said is giving them different perspectives since the beginning, that there is no one truth, and having a team teach is a very nice idea. I never tried that. But also, what have been said on giving them confidence to challenge lecturer and challenge their peers, I think it's a very important one, because if the educators, they are not able to be challenged, or they don't want to be challenged, I think it's no way that students could develop critical thinking. And so maybe the question based on that would be, is it possible to help students develop critical thinking if us as educators, we are not critical thinkers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the real challenge. And there's such a range of people involved in that education process, both from the academic side and the kind of clinical practice side, that trying to get those ideas across. And you know, I mean, certainly in terms of practice education, I don't know how it works elsewhere, but we have relatively little kind of input, really, in terms of being able to get our ideas across to the practice educators for how we might be trying to teach and how they might want to teach. And obviously, as those ideas shift within how we try and do things, it takes a process of time for that to filter out and for people to be kind of comfortable. And obviously, you've got practice educators who are at completely different points in their kind of critical thinking journey, if they're even on one, and different levels of kind of experience and comfortableness with being questioned. So, I'm focusing there more on kind of practice education, but this is a problem probably for in the classroom too. So yeah, having those kind of upfront kind of agreement that we're happy with being challenged and being questioned and teaching students to do that, and having that as an ethos that goes across every aspect of their learning seems like that would be helpful. But I don't know, that also seems like it's quite a challenge to do. Was that anything that came out of the thoughts that you had when you were looking at your trying to overhaul the programme to bring more critical thinking through to it?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. We need to help educators to develop their critical thinking skills, and I think it's the very first point before helping students, because if you don't help the clinical educators to be confident in being challenged and to see why it's important to let the students challenge their ideas and the same in the classroom, I think it's very difficult to show to the students this kind of philosophy that we want them to develop. Is that you it's not black and white, and you need to assess every information that you have, and the things that are being taught now in the program, maybe in 5 years it would be different, and I think all that maybe the first point is to help educators to become critical thinkers.
Yeah, agree. And just coming back to I really liked Michael's point about feedback being essentially done before the mark. So all the feedback should be formative, really, rather than summative, which I think I agree with in principle, but I also in practice know that that's a real challenge. And so I think that's where we often fall down in having a discussion between wanting to do that process, wanting to give students, the feedback at the point that they can use it to change their thinking around some topic or the essay assignment that they're doing, but not being able to do it in a timely fashion, and having much more time to give the feedback once they've handed in the essay, because then that tends to sit at the end of the sort of term, and so there's marking time allocated at that point. So it seems there's like a practical issue here. So that aside, I was also interested in how we might go about giving that feedback. So one of the things that I noticed myself doing, and not consciously, but maybe it does fit with this, is probably most of the feedback that I give throughout an essay is in the form of questions. So I don't tend to give much feedback that says you've done this is good or this is bad, or you know, I think this about it. It's more questions about, you know, who else could be who else could be included here, or how might this change from a different person's perspective, or could you think of any other evidence that might contradict this? Is there something in the way that we try and formulate the feedback that we're giving that promotes questioning and thoughts to try and cause this process, even if it's not done formatively, even if it's going to then inform a subsequent essay, is that still helpful?
I guess the way that, I mean, so maybe I'll address the question in two parts. The first is that I'm not quite sure why giving feedback earlier in the process is very different. Maybe we just have different systems. If my time spent on the student's paper is made up of feedback plus marking, and all that I do is I shift that feedback component into earlier in the process, maybe 2 weeks before the final submission, then there's no feedback given on the final component, like in the final submission. It's just the grade. For myself, I guess I'm just making the point that it hasn't really made it very difficult for me to give that feedback earlier in the process when the student can actually use the feedback. And maybe that's just a question of how we structure our programs. The other thing is, I think that feedback should be predominantly in the form of questions. When a student makes a claim, whether it's an essay or in an assessment form, anywhere where they've made a decision, as a result of following some kind of a process, they reach a decision, your feedback should be not this is wrong, or this is right, well done. It should always be, tell me more about why you made this decision. How did you get from this point to this point? You've made a jump here from, you know, this statement to this statement, but the steps in between are not clear. Can you explain this a little bit more? I think that feedback should, and maybe there are different contexts, but for me generally, feedback is in the form of a question where it's not a case of the student being able to just work through my points and add in the bits that I'm suggesting they've left out. They actually can't move forward unless they engage with the question in some kind of meaningful way. I don't know if that helps with what you were asking there.
Yeah, so I think we're on exactly the same sort of page there, really, and I can completely agree that that's what we should be aiming for, and I think through that process we are then hopefully prompting the thinking and prompting a degree of criticality, and I think the useful thing with comments and as questions is that it doesn't really matter how well the student might be performing in terms of the sort of marks scheme, because we're always going to have questions, and so it should be pushing and promoting the thinking to be happening really across that whole sort of spread of students. So whether or not it's a student who's not passing and these questions are going to help them to get to the point where they might pass, or a student who's doing excellently well but, you know, can still push on to do even to be thinking even more deeply or even broader, the questions hopefully allow that to happen. Just to come back on your point around the timing, I'm certainly not disagreeing that there's any more or less time if we do the feedback sooner. It was more just in terms of how the term might work for structure. So if our time's taken up with quite a lot of teaching at a point where the formative feedback would need to be given, it's maybe easier to allocate time after the talk content has been done and the assignments come in at the end of that, and we then tend to mark them afterwards. So maybe it's just around how we think about the kind of structure of the teaching term or the teaching year to make sure that that formative feedback is given at the most appropriate time. But I'm going to throw it over again to Guillaume and ask, so in the postgraduate module on critical thinking, how did you assess that?
Okay, so for this question, we asked the students during the module, so we discussed what is critical thinking, what are the skills they need to develop, and we discussed some kind of basis in the physiotherapy profession in a critical way, and then they had to do a presentation on one object that they choose, and their peer had to assess their level of criticality in the presentation, and so the student, they had to develop some kind of criteria to assess their peers, and then during all the afternoon we discuss the presentation, but at the same time we discuss the criteria that the students developed during the presentations. And for the assessment of the module, it was something similar, but in a bigger sense. They had to choose something a little bit larger and develop it in writing, but also during a presentation to show this kind of analysis and evaluation of. One topic. I just wanted to ask a question because we first said that the critical thinking was the definition we chose was something more philosophical. We discussed how to facilitate that for the students by giving them confidence to challenge, by helping them to see that there is no one truth. But in your programs, is it clearly written that we facilitate and assess critical thinking in this sense? Because it's probably written in the academic sense that we do assess in essays, but is it really, is it also clearly written in the curriculum or in terms of learning objective that you want to facilitate this kind of critical thinking, more philosophical?
I think I don't think that it's explicitly there, but I'd have to go and check how we've written. I think we certainly, there are certainly, I guess, from an academic institution, then there are kind of graduate attributes and those learning outcomes where I think critical thinking would be clearly coming through in those. I'm not sure that we translate them to the physio program in quite the way, in such an explicit way, and in such a way that we're setting out that we are going to try and kind of undermine that certainty and kind of create that critical thought right from the word go. So there's maybe something for us to think about there. It feels like it should be in there. Would you agree?
Here in Switzerland, when I looked at, it's clearly written, we want to develop clinical reasoning, we want to develop the critical thinking in terms of the academic writing, but in terms of the philosophical criticality that we discuss, it's more something where we should facilitate that in students, but it is not written in any module specifically. It's not written in the curriculum. So it's a little bit difficult to know where and how and when we do that.
What we can see is from the conversation that we've had, there are certainly some. It feels like if we should probably be clear that this is something that we want to do. We should be clear from the start that part of what we're wanting the students to learn is that they shouldn't trust us on everything, and that they need to think for themselves, and that there might be more than one truth. And so being explicit about that up front would seem to me to be a really helpful thing. And that actually some of the kind of practical ways we've discussed about doing that go to the heart of maybe just looking at our own practice. And it's how we set up the teaching, how we set up the assessment and the feedback for that assessment can make quite a big difference. So we almost are able to kind of model the critical thinking process that we're wanting the students to get, so that then it's being taught in an implied way as well, but being backed up with this explicit kind of statement right from the start that this is something that we're expecting them to be getting out of the programme. So I'm conscious of the time. I just wondered if people had kind of a summary thought or thing that they wanted to sort of wrap up onto to end this.
The pressure of trying to make a sensible summary. I like Guillaume's sum up of the importance of introducing the concepts on a philosophical level early, but also maybe we need to look at how we explicitly include this in our material, in our course handbooks, rather than, often these things are just there as words and tick box aspects, but they are hugely important, certainly as aspects, so maybe we need to look at that as a starting point.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I think we'd all agree with that, and as you say, that idea that they're there, but in trying to answer the question about what's in ours, I'd have to go and look at it, so it's making sure that actually they are a reflection of what we want them to be, and that we live them in some sense, otherwise they're just existing as this kind of separate piece of documentation that we pull out if we need to, but actually isn't really informing or kind of changing anything about what we do. Okay, so Guillaume also is happy with the summary. I will throw back over to you just to say thank you and thanks for kind of kickstarting this topic and for the thoughts that you've put in, and I hope it's been an interesting conversation. I think we've covered some nice ideas that people could try and practice, as well as some of the kind of more thorny, problematic issues of actually how challenging some of this might be to get across and to get that change. You know, but I guess if we're promoting thought on the topic, then that's got to be a good start. And hopefully we were explicit about that in our programme outcomes for this in beta session before we started, so that we've lived all of our critical thinking ideals. That's the word I'm looking for. Okay, so thank you to Guillaume, and thank you to Michael, thank you to Ken, and I hope you've all enjoyed listening, and we will see you again on another in beta session soon.